good evening. Thank you for tuning in. This is our first outdoor episode of Financial Fitness. I want to welcome my friend Grant Clayton.
Thank you.
President and CEO, owner of 1% List, the man who's disrupting the real estate industry a little bit. And that's why I wanted to bring him on, actually. I love people who are innovators. I like things that are different, that are disruptive, that shake things up a little bit. You know, we might hurt a few feelings today. But it is something that needs to be done in our industry. You know, we've been doing things the same way for probably 40, 50 years. And now with technology and innovation, it's change coming. And so tell me, where did 1% List come from? The idea behind it and the motivation there for you.
Sure. I mean, it started for my wife and I. We got married. We decided to move from the South Shore to the North Shore, and we hired an agent and didn't have a very good experience with that agent. And once that happened, we kind of said to ourselves, you know what, we can do better. And so we got into the industry, but the industry was kind of pulling us to turn into what we didn't like about our agent.
How much did you pay that that didn't do that good of a job?
6%.
Right.
And and I remember, I mean, I won't go into the gory details, but I mean, it was, we felt like we definitely didn't get 6% worth.
Right.
Put it to you that way. And so we decided to get in the industry just thinking, you know, hey, we can do better. But, you know, once we got into the industry started pulling us and kind of turning us, or at least trying to turn us into what we didn't like. And we saw so many agents that are great agents and great people that never seem to do well. And so many people that we didn't think were the best agents or even the best people, but they're top producers and everybody loves them and respects them. And now we got kind of disillusioned with the whole process and everything about the industry.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. Being on the mortgage side, it's sometimes frustrating. For example, I'm dealing with a agent, ironically, that I told we're not a fit to work with you in Texas. And now she keeps sending us leads and buyers over after I told her that we're not a fit, because she was taking all of the clients that she would send, and then I call it pimping out our loan estimate to 10 other brokers. I work with 10 brokers. And I said, I'm not the 11th.
Right.
And it's like playing poker. If my cards are facing everyone the whole time, I'm never going to win a hand. And after I've told her we're not going to work with you anymore, it's funny. Now she tells everybody, these guys are the best.
Right.
These are the guys you need to work with. And she got to see that our fees were not the highest.
Right.
We were the most competitive. But I'm not going to work with someone that is constantly trying to get other loan officers to undercut me. And when we turned the tables around and I actually used you guys as an example. I said, I happen to know the guy that owns 1% Lists. Maybe I should introduce all your clients to him, because
right.
that's what you're doing to me. And do you want me to get everyone to compare your approach with the gentleman that owns 1% List? And she's like, oh, well, yeah.
Oh,
all
yeah.
of a sudden.
Look, everybody likes shopping with somebody else's money is at the end of the day the point of it. And I've run into plenty of those situations where, you know, you get customers that are $1,000 apart on inspections. And, you know, the realtors, they want to call, oh, we'll call the lender and see if they'll give us some money. We'll call the title company, see if they'll waive some fees. But it's never like raising their hand saying, you know what, I'm going to make this deal work. And what we train our agents is, every time you do that and you raise your hand and say, you know what, I'm going to make sure this deal works, you're not losing money. What you're doing is you're investing in your future self. You're basically putting money into your real estate 401k, because you're going to stick your neck out, and for $500 or $1,000 or whatever it is, you're going to let that client know, you're more important to me than this $1,000.
Yep.
And they will remember you forever.
Absolutely.
When you do that. But when they're in like the heat of the battle and you just drop your gun and point at everybody else and say, well, they'll take care of it, it's like, no, like they don't feel like you're the advocate. And that's
right.
The point is to be the advocate for the customer.
You're not vested in it. And prime example, you know, my wife's been in real estate for a long time, and of course we work together frequently.
Sure.
She had a deal that the seller would not budge, the buyer would not budge, and at the end of the day it was to pay for a $500 home warranty.
Yep.
This is about to fall apart, and my wife asks the listing agent, look, your seller has been quite a handful, let's split it. Mm-hmm. She said, I'm not cutting my commission.
Right.
So my wife said, really? Okay, I'm gonna remember that.
Right.
And at the she said, don't worry about it, I've got it covered. Mm-hmm. I'll take care of the inspection. And the seller afterward thanked her, and this is a guy who buys and sells a lot of real mm-hmm. estate. And he said, I really appreciate what you did on that deal, and I'm gonna remember that in the future if I need an agent.
Yeah, it's funny. So this reminds me of a topic that I saw in one of those private realtor Facebook groups. It actually popped up, it was either today or yesterday, where there's always these agents posting things saying, I can't believe my best friend used this other agent. Well, I can't believe this person did this. I can't believe this person did this. Well, the whole issue with it, the reason why that happens so often is because they understand, or you're making them feel like the money is more important to them than them. And whenever you make somebody feel like you're just in it on the take, you're just in it to get the maximum dollar out of them possible, they don't look at you like a friend. There is no loyalty because you're not showing loyalty to them. And, you know, my only response to the whole thing is, when you start treating friends like they're friends, and you don't demand their business, and you don't demand their loyalty, and you don't look at them like a bank account that you can just take money out of, you'll be amazed at how frequently they will give you their business, because you can feel that.
Yeah.
Right. It has a feel to it. It's not just how you act. It's how, you know, there's a tangible almost feeling to that you give people when you treat them the right way.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good way of looking at it. And the harsh reality, too, again, there's a lot of agents that aren't really good at what they do. A lot of loan officers, too. Believe me, in my industry, I'm not just pointing the fingers. So if your friends and family aren't using you, you got to take a hard look in the mirror.
Yeah.
At some point. And then also, do they know what you do?
Right.
Does everyone know what you do? Coaching tip, you have to remind people frequently what you do, because sometimes it's just out of sight, out of mind. And it's an innocent mistake sometimes where, oh, I didn't realize, I've had people, I didn't realize you could do loans in other cities, not even other states. I was I can do all 50 states. But they're like, I didn't know you did stuff in Shreveport.
Yeah. but it's funny, it's like when you look at things the right way, you're not mad at them anymore. What you're almost mad at yourself is like, I didn't explain myself properly.
Right.
And you know, there, to me, experience comes from doing. It doesn't come from teaching, it comes from doing. And look, there are a lot of there's bad lenders, there's bad title companies, there's bad agents. But I think, at least on behalf of the agents, there's just so many agents and not enough deals that it's hard to get good at what you do when you only do your job two or three times a year. And there's so many, especially in this market where the interest rate's climbing and everything else, you get a ton of agents that are doing their job once every 3 months.
Yeah.
How are you ever supposed to get good at it? Like truly, how do you know the real estate market if you only step foot in it once a quarter?
Right.
You know?
A master has to do something for thousands and thousands of hours to master any craft.
Do you know, I mean, how many agents do you think there are that are out there that haven't done a deal since last fall? I mean, imagine a lender, you haven't done a deal since last fall, and you're like, hang on, rates are at 7.5. I thought they were at 3.
There's
last time
guidelines.
I did a deal, they were at 3. Yeah, it's crazy, but that's unfortunately the industry that I belong in.
Yeah.
It's not what I think the industry should be.
No, and honestly, I'm one that I'm glad we've had this year, and we're gonna have another year of high rates
probably.
I think we've got a full year before we see any real cooling off with the market, inflation, things to bring rates down. And I call it thinning the herd. So there's a lot of agents. I saw agent count locally went from like 4,000 to 3,000. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I think it's a wonderful thing.
Exactly. Same thing with loan officers. I've seen about a 20% decrease in loan officers. Again, if you can't weather the storm right now, that's because you're not strong enough and good. I mean, I guess survival of the fittest.
Sure.
It's the same thing in the wild. Like, if you weren't strong enough to survive and hunt, then you weren't fit for that environment. And you're not fit for this current higher rate environment, and you can't sell.
Right. I think survival of the fittest, I think it can be, that can be cut in two different ways. And I totally agree on both. The first one is you run into some market headwind that's unforeseen, like inflation goes crazy and interest rates go from 2.5 to 8 and nobody wants to move. That's one. But then another one is market disruption, where you are facing new competitors that you've never even heard of or thought about or anything else. And if you can't survive that, then that might be like the knock on the door saying, hey, you're not Target and Walmart, you know, you're actually Sears and JCPenney.
Right.
And Kmart, and like, that's nobody's fault, and you don't deserve protection from that, because if your heart is residing in, I've got to take care of my clients, then you got to think, well, I've got to do better.
Yeah. And you're that disruptor. So how is it, because I see these, and I call it desperation posts. Mm-hmm. I saw one, it just screamed desperation, and it got shared all over. I guess, sure. Things a realtor does, and the mm-hmm. average income of a realtor is only $31,000, and then they list all, and I sat there, and when I couldn't even finish reading.
Name me another industry that does that.
It was such a turnoff to read, like, the first paragraph. And then I thought to myself, if a nurse published about bathing people and cleaning poop and doing what would you think? And the things we do every day on social media in our industry are just kind of a turnoff. And so when I saw that, here you guys are, and they're wanting 5% and 6%. I got a funny story we'll talk about in a little bit.
Sure.
But your name of your company is 1%. How are you able to survive and profit if most of these people can't profit or survive at 4%, 5%, and 6%?
Well, for starters, if I can rewind for just a second, I was about to fail out of the industry whenever I was trying to charge high commissions.
Okay.
I would not have made it. And you can take that for whatever it is, but if I had to do the typical real estate agent thing where I'm doing the same thing for the same fee as everybody else, I would not have survived. And so it wasn't until I had the idea back in 2012 of, I'm going to charge a little bit less money, but I'm going to go talk to all these home builders who are building 15 houses a year, and I'm going to save them 1.5% on each one of their listings. Okay. And then that did an amazing thing. It got me signs in the ground, but more importantly, there was always people calling me. They want more information about this new construction house. And then you talk to them and say, oh, well, what's the deal? Well, I would love to buy, but I need to sell first. Oh, well, I can help you sell. And then eventually what it turned into is, well, why am I charging them higher fees when I'm giving this builder this great deal? Why don't I just charge them lower fees? And so then I just started focusing on, you know what, I'm just going to be full service and save everybody money. And when that happened, I made more money than I ever thought I would make. I made way more money than when I was charging 6%. I can't imagine going back to doing that. And the reason is it's not fun. It doesn't make me happy to feel like I'm pulling higher fees out of people. What's fun is doing deals and meeting people and those things. And having a better value proposition means you get to meet more people and do more deals and do more things. And that's what I love about the industry.
Yeah.
You know, I don't love calling my sphere and asking for deals. I don't love those things, but you know, once you start turning into a volume-based business, no different than Amazon or Walmart or anybody else, well, you learn how to run more efficiently. You don't learn how to cut corners, you just learn how to make this more efficient, because you have to.
Right.
And, you know.
Well, and technology today.
Oh my gosh, technology is
amazing. Is giving people the ability to price shop me as a lender. I can't make 5-6% like we did in the subprime days, there's no way. You know, we've got a few of the big retail giants that are still doing it. And now that people are getting educated that brokers are better for a mortgage, that retail lenders, I had a deal today. I told my Oklahoma office that we're opening. He sent me two offers, one from, I forget the other company, and one was guaranteed rate. And I had a little stint there. And I said, what is it? That they send a one-page thing, and at the top it says that this is not your fees and you should get an actual loan estimate and the fees could go up. He said, yeah, it sure does. And I said, okay. And there's no origination, no discount listed on that sheet, right? He goes, no, there isn't. I said, okay, get on the phone, call back, ask them that rate, those fees, and this was a week ago, rates have gone up again in the last week, and we were still priced better. And he said, oh, you know what's funny? My wife, who's the guy, who's the realtor, she said, she got on the phone with her client, and he said, well, we don't disclose points until we lock in.
Right.
But yeah, it's 2 points discount for that today.
Right.
You know, so that bait and switch
sucks.
Bullshit. I mean, that's shady.
And, it sucks.
And I haven't seen that type of stuff since the subprime days. But that's what these big companies now are resorting to. And they can afford the fines if they get slapped on the wrist for it.
And I'm glad you bring up the term bait and switch, because that's what we get accused of. And but the funny thing is we're in over 40 markets around the country. We're in over 20 states now. We're opening South Dakota today in Minneapolis, St. Paul today. So we're opening Quad Cities today. And it's one of those things where everybody says, oh, it's bait and switch. And I say, why? And they're like, well, because it's not just 1%. I say, okay. And they're like, well, everybody knows that it's this. And I was like, where? In Charlotte? Or in Orange County, California? Or in Destin, Florida? Or are we talking about Seattle? And do you mean to name 30-something more markets that I'm in that you're not in? Because real estate is not local. Like, whenever we started franchising, we started looking at commission structures around the country. They varied between 0% to a buyer's agent and 3.5% was the norm, the quote-unquote norm. And so at that point, it was like, you know what? There is no norm. There is no traditional. There is no standard. All that we could say is, we're going to be full service. We're going to do a great job, and we're going to charge you 1%. And then we'll look at what buyer's agents are getting on average in that market, and you might choose to offer that. You might choose to use some of the savings that we provide you and offer more to a buyer's agent to stir activity. You might offer less because you think everybody's going to swarm your house anyways. But the point is that what we're going to charge you to be full service is 1% out the door, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it just makes sense, man. It just works.
Right. Yeah. We had a situation recently, actually, at a listing, dealing with inspection issues, and the seller, they're retired. They're strapped.
Sure.
My wife is listing it for 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And total comp was 3%, because she knows that no one's going to show the property for less than 2%. And so we go to the walkthrough where they're going back over the inspection items. The dad shows up for the buyer, and their agent shows up, and I mean his outfit's a complete wreck. The father actually made.
Hopefully, he doesn't see this video until you close your deal.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, he doesn't send me any business anyway. So, and that's another irony. You know, I told the guy, "Hey, I know the family. I know the sellers. Just let me look at it. Tell your buyer to call me." And I guarantee you I can get them a better deal. I can save them some money. I know they're really strapped, and they needed $10,000 in closing costs.
Oh, sure.
Then they wanted repairs. Let me look at it. I finally, this weekend, find out what their numbers are. And even though the last 3 weeks rates have shot up,
right,
I can save them about $5,000 in closing costs and get them a 0.25% lower rate.
Mm-hmm.
And their agent never even mentioned me, because the dad goes, how did we not know about you? I said, well, you should, because I told your agent to tell you guys about me, because I know you guys need every penny you can get. Oh, he never mentioned you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, really? Well, yeah. You know, like, again, that's that service to the client. And now we've got the deal inked, and hopefully I'm going to get the mortgage. But it was just funny how... It
shouldn't be that hard.
I guarantee you he knows the guy at the other place.
Probably.
And because it even went one step further where it was a matter of, oh, well, they're probably just going to stay put. Why would you stay put to pay $5,000 more in closing costs and get a 0.25% higher rate? No rational human being would do that.
Right. Look, I get it. And here's the thing. When it comes to lending... It's all about what's the rate, what's the cost, and all those things. And when it comes to, I always use a car analogy, because people said, oh, well, you're in a race to the bottom talking about my company. I'm like, no, here's the thing. You know, looking at cars, you have cost-effective cars. And then you have Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
And plenty of people buy a Mercedes-Benz.
I had one.
But plenty of people buy cost-effective cars.
Yep.
At the end of the day, Mercedes-Benz doesn't have a value problem. Okay? They're crazy expensive, but they're crazy luxurious, crazy, just off the charts everything. And that's their value proposition. For the cost-effective cars, they don't have a value proposition problem. They're cost-effective, mechanically sound, with a big, long warranty, which is what somebody wants. They're point A to point B.
Yeah.
Neither one of them have a value problem. But, you know, where I run into issues with the industry is when people think, well, no, people shouldn't have choice. No, you should have choice.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell clients all the time, I'm like, look, real estate agents were running around in the late 1800s on horses trying to not get bitten by snakes in the wilderness, charging 6%. I can now send documents to Korea like that. I've sold houses for clients that I've never met.
Right.
It's not as hard as it used to be. And for somebody to not even want to send their client, hey, talk to this guy because you might save money. People appreciate people that save them money. Like, if that agent was smart, he would say, heck yeah, go shop it. See if you can get a better deal, because then they're going to look at him and say, oh, my agent saved me money. I love my agent. I'm going to use that agent again because here's his value.
Yeah.
But when you try to withhold it from them, and you're just, it's all about pulling cash out of the customer, that's when your business is in trouble.
Yeah. Well, and you know, because you know the agents, I know my high volume agents, mm-hmm. my good ones, a lot of the ones that have been on this show, they're never nagging me. Mm-hmm. Is the appraisal order? Is the appraisal order? They get their updates. They're happy. Mm-hmm. If by some slim chance, it's very, very rare, but there's the occasional time we might need to extend,
mm-hmm.
okay, just let me know. I give them plenty of notice. I say, you know, the appraisal due date is the rural market. Appraisal's going to take 2 weeks. We're going to need to extend it. Some kind of unforeseen situation, they don't mind.
Sure.
It's the agent that's doing a deal a quarter. That's their mortgage, their rent, that's their one deal for the month or even for the quarter. Mm-hmm. And similar situation, you know, we're $2,500 apart,
sure.
on this inspection. They're asking for $14,000 in repairs, and my sellers don't have it.
Right.
My wife's already at 1%. He's at 2%. She can't say anything. We're standing there. The dad's asking, what do we have to do to make this work? I said, honestly, we've done all we can on my side.
Right.
I don't have the mortgage. I can't help you guys save any money there. And my wife has already cut her commission to 1%. Mm-hmm. And I thought of you when this happened.
I'm glad you did.
And it was funny, because the dad was really taken back by that. He goes, you guys are really doing everything you can to keep this deal together. Mm-hmm. And the other agent said, I've already reduced my commission.
No, you haven't.
And he hadn't.
No, he hadn't touched it. He didn't even set his own commission. No, man,
the dad read it like a book.
Oh, yeah. And it's sad, and it's tough when everybody feels like they just get entrenched in a position, and all it takes is one person to just be the bigger person and say, you know what, I'm just going to make sure this happens, because the transaction and the people involved are more important than the money. I'm just going to make sure it happens. Funny thing, the best client I ever had, like the one client, if I could say, the client that put us on the map was Jason Yancey, Yar Construction over there in West St. Tammany.
Okay.
How I got all of his business was I sold one of his houses. He had a Parade of Homes home.
Okay.
Okay, so the Parade of Homes, for those that don't know, it's basically a huge open house where all the builders show off their homes and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed this house to a client. It wasn't listed. And there was a fridge there. And I did not, it's a brand new house, never been lived in. I see a fridge, and I made a mistake. I assumed that the fridge was staying. And I didn't write it into the deal.
Yeah, likely assumption.
And later on, we're getting through the deal, and I reached out to him, and I said, hey, that fridge is staying, right? And he's like, dude, I borrowed that fridge. He said, I don't even own it. And I told him, I was like, I screwed up. And I told him, I said, look, please let me know what your cost is on the fridge, and I'm gonna pay for it.
Right.
And he loved that so much, just because I wasn't trying to beat him up. I didn't try to turn the client against him, because he's probably gonna have to deal with that client in the future for repairs or whatever. I didn't try to leverage the situation. I just said, you know what, I screwed up and I'm paying for a fridge.
Right.
And because I just voluntarily paid for a fridge, dude, we sold so many houses. I sold neighborhoods with this guy.
Wow.
Just millions and millions and millions of dollars in production. but it was because I took one for the team.
One of my things I always say is people over profits. And
yeah,
I've discounted our services numerous times as a mortgage company. We've screwed up. We're human.
Yeah.
I had a loan officer.
And you got to pay for it when you do.
Oof. I had a loan officer.
And it sucks, but it's what you got
to
do.
Big. She forgot to lock a rate during the refi boom.
Ouch.
We were doing a lot of jumbo refis at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was a $1.4 million deal. She just dropped the ball. Forgot to lock it. And I'd sent lock alerts. I'd update my team. At the end of the day, I told her, we're not changing what we quoted the client. We took a $17,000 hit, and we did that loan for free. We didn't make anything on that loan. Actually lost money on the deal because I'm big on we're going to honor what we say. And if we made the mistake, I'm not, and a lot of companies will go to the client and say, you weren't locked in. Yeah,
so
and here's where the rate is.
We have our way of dealing with that. How do you deal with that? Basically, what we do in that situation, what I've always done, and I'm sure my agents around the country do it differently, but what I do is I would always tell a client, I was like, look, just to let you know, I made a mistake, and here's where the mistake is, but I just want to let you know I took care of it, okay? And you don't have to worry about it. It's done, but you're good. And so you're letting them know a couple of things. Number one, you're human. Number two, you make mistakes. Because so many people in our industry is like, oh, you have to be perfect. You have to be the pinnacle of luxury and everything. It has to be perfect. No, you need to be human.
Yeah.
You need to be identifiable. But when you make the mistakes, they need to know that you're going to own it.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's the most important thing.
100%. I've got clients, and you probably do too. Some of my complaints from loan officer clients that we had, they were upset. Loan officer dropped the ball. I, as the owner, took the call. Own it, address it, fix it, whatever we have to do to make it right. And a few of these clients that were major complaint clients are now personal friends. Mm-hmm. They're repeat clients.
Yep.
And have referred people after they started out unhappy because the loan officer dropped the ball. But it was, there were no excuses ever. Never make excuses. People can smell that a mile away. And it's funny now, you know, Todd, a guy that he couldn't stand, and it was one of those, you make bad hires in this business. And so, guy that's no longer here, couldn't stand a loan officer. A loan officer was not owning up to his promises, was not delivering on time, was behind schedule. I took that, closed the deal, made it right. We've gone to Saints games together.
Yeah.
He actually interviewed with me to come become a loan officer. I mean, he has become we've been friends now about 8 years.
You want to hear something funny? So this is about the most, whenever we would do a listing presentation, our listing presentation at our company, as you can imagine, is about as off the wall different as you can imagine. It's not the big typical real estate agent pitch. It's very laid back. It's very factual. We tell them, look, here it is, Google it. Okay, if you don't believe us on any of these things, just Google it.
Right.
We look like it, like we're pulling the curtain back on the real estate industry to show people how things really work.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, there's a picture and it says communication, and literally we end the listing presentation with this, or at least this is how I do it. I tell them, you're not hiring your best friend right now. You're hiring me because I'm very cost effective and I'm very, very good at what I do. I'm not going to call you every day just to make you my best friend and tell you, oh my gosh, the sky is blue, the birds are chirping, which is beautiful outside today, by the way.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, dude, it's awesome. But I tell them, I'm not going to call you and do that. I'm doing deals every day. I'm a volume-based business. That's what makes me good. That's why you want me, because I've got more experience. But I'm not going to call you every day and tell you, hey, I'm your best friend and I have nothing to tell you. And you know what? In an industry full of people that are trying to be best friends with all their clients so they can pull that business out of them, people love it. And the reason is because they understand they're hiring me as a professional to do a job.
Right.
And I'm good at it. And
yeah,
I'm cost effective. And my heart is in it for them. I'm trying to save them money and things like that. And so they love that so much more than feeling massaged and handled by some salesperson who's just trying to get at their friends and their families and their neighbors and all that stuff. And it's such a different feel. I've had so many people say, oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just different, man. And look, we can become best friends with our clients.
I agree.
But I don't want you to hire me because I'm your best friend.
Yeah, I really can't recall a listing that my wife has done at 6%. I can't recall one, because a lot of times it's sphere of influence, past clients, referrals, friends. And two, I think that ship has sailed. And obviously you're in agreement there, because 6% now to list a house with technology and everything that's out there, it's hard to justify. And you have to be there, and you have to really upsell,
right,
to try to justify that cost.
So it's weird. I can tell you we're getting ready to roll out recruiting services across the country for all of our offices, where we're going to start trying to recruit all these agents.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the market is down 40-50%.
Sure.
And so if you're watching this and you make 80 grand a year as a dental hygienist or whatever the hell it is you do, imagine cutting your salary in half. That's the equivalent of what the real estate industry is
doing. And the cost
with.
Of everything is...
The cost goes up and
to
yes,
live right
and
now.
Your income goes down by half. And so I'm reaching out to all these agents, and whenever I'm reaching out to all these agents, I'm just encouraging them, hey, consider something different. A funny line that I say to all these agents, and this kind of ties into what your wife does, and probably also the way you run your business. I've got a funny story about this. But it's like, I just tell them, look, imagine I'm your real estate fairy godmother, and I can offer you one listing right now at 3% or three listings at 1%. Which one's better for your career? Every single agent I've ever spoken to will say, well, I want three listings at 1%. And I'll say, okay. But then they'll say, before I can even say anything, they'll say, but I would work them into my sphere, and I would try to hold open houses and talk to their family and friends and neighbors and get them to pay a higher fee. I'm like, no, you're missing the point. You're totally missing the point. I can remember there's a lender in West St. Tammany. I wound up at his office after this mixer one night, and this guy, we're sitting there playing pool in his office. He's got a pretty cool office, and he's like, there's a guy asking me about what I do, and I have no idea who this guy is. And he's asking me about all this stuff, so I just tell him, hey, this is what we do. This is how we do it. This is the idea behind the business. And then he reveals that he's a real estate broker.
Oh.
And he's had a few drinks, and then he's like, well, I just think y'all are awful, and y'all are devaluing the industry, and y'all are ruining the industry and everything else. And he's getting all heated and loud. I'm like waiting for the pool ball to be thrown at me. And then my lender buddy walks in, and the lender buddy, like, he's like, he says to him, he's like, well, I hope you don't ever devalue yourself. Don't ever sell out. And I'm looking at the lender, I'm like, does he not realize you're competing with five other lenders on every deal you do? Do real estate agents think we are above reproach and we can't ever lower our fees, but title companies and lenders, oh yeah, y'all need to compete. When banks compete, you win.
Oh man, we're shopped like crazy.
Look, real estate agents encourage you guys to be shopped.
I have realtors.
And then they get frustrated if you ask them to give up $200.
I know, I have realtors that they give three or four. Here, reach out to these three or four people. They like lending tree us. And
so offended if you did that to them.
Are you kidding? I would have no business.
Oh, dude, there would be torches and pitchforks outside your office.
I would be out of business if I did that. You know, and that's the irony, is that we're commoditized, and then agents are still, like I said, that desperation post trying to justify why we're worth 5 or 6%. Number one, if you had to make that post, probably one of the ones
it's
that's
telling.
Worth 5 or 6%.
But it's telling.
It's a desperate act. You know, when you're posting to justify why I need to do this, instead of just being so valuable and being the expert and being someone that people look to.
Well, here's the thing, I'll defend the real estate agent for a second. I think there's a lot of agents out there, and I can name a few in my home office market, that are over the top awesome. I mean, they are the Mercedes agent, but yeah, they're like legit the Mercedes agent. They are over the top hands-on. They are over the top everything. And they get their 5 and 6% all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
What I have a problem with is the people that are making that post are the ones not worth it.
No.
The ones that are really offering over the top service, you'll never see them share that.
No.
They never give me hate mail, because they look at it like, look, I'm doing a completely different business than you. The ones that will share those things, and the ones that post those things, and the ones that get all offended at the fact that we exist,
right,
are the ones.
We got a Ferrari going behind us right now, so
yeah.
He's not worried. Oh, there's Gordon. He's not worried about
Who's that, Gordon McKernan?
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, he's doing all right.
Yeah. So they're not worried. Again, like Lamborghini says, we don't run TV commercials because our clients aren't watching TV.
But if they did, they would not be targeting Honda with them.
They wouldn't care.
That's not their business model.
Exactly.
And so my argument is there's so many agents out there. There's a handful that are really worth it. And then there's a ton that aren't, but they charge the same fees as the ones that do.
Right, trying to charge Ferrari prices for a Honda.
Yeah, you're driving your Civic over to the Ferrari dealership, parking it on the Ferrari lot, and be like, boom, I got a Ferrari. No, you don't.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
I agree, because like you said, some of those Mercedes agents, they're spending a lot of money on advertising. They're spending a lot of money on billboards. They're spending a lot of money promoting your property at a different level. Like, I mean, we've spent thousands of dollars. I mean, yeah, on a $2 million listing in Covington, we're investing a lot of money in that. You know, so that listing, there's a lot of money going out on that. Whereas a lot of times, I mean, you see it all the time. Put a sign in your yard and set it and forget it.
Yeah.
That's what I see a lot of times happen, is that we have created this culture where half the agents just set a sign in the yard, set it and forget it, and then there are the ones that work their butt off.
So here's the argument for that. So here's where we could have a fun debate. So if I were to ask you, what percentage of people right now are finding the home that they eventually buy online? What percentage do you think that is? What percentage of people our age shop online for real estate?
It's over 60%. It's closer to like 85 or 90%.
99.
Okay.
Okay, there's a study that NAR did called Real Estate in the Digital Age. And Generation X and below, over 99% shop online for real estate. What about baby boomers?
Baby boomers is from the 60 to 70%.
97.
Range. Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So baby, it's nuts. And so if you think about it, the argument for our business is this. You get the argument that, well, you shouldn't just put a sign in the ground and walk off. Well, here's the thing. What do real estate agents do beyond what we do? So we're taking professional photographies, we're doing a market analysis, we're handling the transaction from beginning to end, all negotiations, all paperwork, we're handling all those things. The only things that we're not doing by default, open houses, broker tours, print media. So if COVID-19 taught us one thing, it's that you can have an amazing seller's market without any open houses and without any broker tours.
True.
Because they were banned. And we had the greatest seller's market maybe in the history of the country. Now then, if I told you today, imagine your wife's not a real estate agent. I was like, dude, you gotta go home and tell your wife, honey, we're moving today. Is she going to be like, holy shit, go get a magazine? No, she's not.
Go get a magazine.
She's going to say, oh my gosh, go on Zillow, type in our address, see what our house is worth, and let's start shopping.
Right.
In our pajamas while we're sipping a glass of wine. Everything has changed. Technology has changed. So my argument is that before somebody should pay 6%, they should be all in for probably 3.5% with a company like mine, and offer an interest rate buy down to all buyers, offer closing costs to buyers, offer a big fat buyer's agent bonus.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do.
And to me, yeah, I'm sure you do. And so to me, that's better marketing than potato salad and a Starbucks card.
Yes.
It just is. Just because I've been to some broker tours and I don't see the agents with the clients there.
Right.
I see the people looking to win a Starbucks card and get a free lunch there. And I'm sure it's cool to hang out.
Only agents show up at those.
Right. Agents, what do you think the odds are of an agent finding the house that their client buys? 1 out of 3.
Wow, okay.
All the rest of the time?
The client picked it and said, I want to see this house.
Which, can I be honest with you? I love it.
Sure.
And the reason is I tell our clients, like, look, for decades, the fees have been high because real estate agents were the gatekeepers of information. Now we're not. Like, I can Google the tax code, but I got a CPA. You know, it's like now you're actually valuing me to negotiate and price homes and actually structure contracts and do my job.
Yes.
You're not paying a higher fee because, ooh, only I have the MLS and you got to pay me.
Yeah.
No.
I think where you guys earn...
It's different.
The good agents, to me, the repairs request and the negotiations, the contract negotiations, you know, that's where I... Because I'm the middleman. I'm always in between the buying and the selling agent. And when I've got good agents,
yeah,
things run smooth, repairs get done, sellers pay for repairs, buyers agree to compromise, and everything works well. When I work with weak agents, it is the worst, because I will go through four approvals. We will submit four loans to underwriting, and then on day 8 or 9 of the repairs period, oh, well, they decided they want to keep looking because the inspection report was not good. The inspection report's always going to have a ton of shit on it. That's what an inspection report does. It's your job to know what really is important, what is just the little minute things that don't have to break a sale.
I had an agent.
And then actually negotiate and be able to get both sides to come together and mediate to where we walk out victorious. Neither side may be the big winner, but if you can make the deal happen, they get the house they want, the seller gets a price that they're comfortable with.
It's not our job to fight. It's not a real estate agent's job to fight other real estate agents.
Yeah.
Now then, if I have to fight, then it's my job to win. But it's not my job to fight. And at the end of the day, I think if you ask the typical buyer and seller, what's more important, that you just have a bulldog as an agent, or that you have a very smooth transaction that goes perfect? And most people say, I want a smooth transaction that goes perfect. Like, my stress level is not going to go down if I missed out on another $300 on the inspection. My stress level is going to go up if I feel like everybody's fighting and this thing might blow up. And at the end of the day, you know, you deal with scarcity versus abundance. And when you get the agent that's got one egg in the nest, and that egg has to hatch, they get testy, they get fighty, they lash out.
Yeah.
Whereas when you have an agent that's gonna do 4 or 5 deals a month, like one of our good agents, you're gonna do 4 deals a month, you're not so paranoid.
Right.
You're not there to fight. And ultimately, look, man, it's not my job to fight people, you know? I'm just here to do my job, they do their job, we're gonna find something in the middle where everybody can live with it, and we're just gonna move on and make it as stress-free as we can.
Exactly. I always say we're a team. I end up mediating sometimes. Not sometimes, frequently, more than I like.
Sure.
Because I find that there are that percentage of agents that are, I call them instigators.
Right.
They have this misconception somewhere that they were taught in their career that they have to be an agitator, and they have to pour gas on every little thing to make it, and then it makes them feel important, but ultimately all they do is add stress,
add cost,
and add a lot of conflict into the scenario. Where when I have my good agents, we never ever, everything runs smooth like clockwork, we get to the finish line, and it's a happy situation.
Oh, dude, look, and in the past 2 years, not today's market, it's just crazy different with interest rates, but in the past 2 years, when we were dealing with multiple offer situations, and we get 7 or 8 offers on a property, sometimes we've had agents across the country, I got 30 offers on this property. They're gonna go through it, they're gonna look at financing terms, they're gonna look at contingencies, they're gonna look at all these things. But if you think to yourself, they're not gonna look at it and say, this agent's a psycho, and they are likely to blow up a deal and rule that person out, they will absolutely do that. And they should.
Yeah.
And look, if your offer is $500 higher than another offer, but you're a total psychopath as an agent,
right,
and you're likely to blow up a deal and you're likely to make everything worse, it's not against code of ethics for that agent to tell their client, hey, this agent's a hot mess and it might not work out.
Yeah. Well, they do that too with our pre-approval letters. The joy of filming outside.
Absolutely. We got Gordon in the Ferrari, we got the planes, man, we got a little bit of everything, but I'm loving it, it's worth it.
No, it's absolutely, just to get a little fresh air and get outside. But I know,
right,
because I've gotten a call from a listing agent countless times. Hey, I saw this pre-approval with your name on it. They're good?
Yeah.
We're gonna take your offer because I got this Quicken Loans offer, and I don't trust Quicken.
Absolutely.
I don't trust, you know, the big national lenders.
They shouldn't.
Yeah, so a lot of the local agents, when they see my name on a pre-approval letter, okay, Brandon's good. Mm-hmm. We'll take that. So I totally agree that they have to look at who the other agent is, who the loan officer, or if it's a cash offer, of course, you know, that always helps play in sometimes.
Oh, sure.
But it's frequently done that I get a call from the listing agent because they know who I am and they know my company, and they just call to vet the deal. Sure. Because they want it. They're like, okay, yeah. you say it's good.
Right.
That's all I need to hear.
And
I love
day,
hearing that when they tell me that.
Yeah.
You know, because then I know that they trust me.
Yeah. And when you deal with higher volume agents and better producers at the end of the day, you know, all that we really want is we want somebody to say, we want to know that it's in somebody's hands and they are going to do their damn job.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of lenders, as you can imagine, us being a volume-based brokerage. So, you know, everybody wants to meet us. Everybody wants to talk to us. Oh, how can we get some deals, everything else? And you know, because having a lot of listings generates a lot of buyers.
Yeah, sure.
But the point is like, hey, if you just be reasonable on rates, okay, be somebody that I can send somebody to, and I know they're not going to get price gouged, you're going to be competitive, and you just do your damn job, then I can do mine.
Yeah.
And I just tell them, look, unless you want to grab a beer, I don't really want to hear from you unless there's a problem. If there's a problem, I want to know.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I don't really care.
Right.
I'm going to trust you to do your damn job, just like I'm doing mine.
Yeah.
And we're done. You know, it's the way things should be.
Yeah. No, and I'm one, you're going to get all of our status updates from the system, and then you'll get basic updates of the milestones.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm one, too, because of the volume we do and my workload, I'm not gonna update you and call you every single day.
Sure.
I told you that I told her we're not a fit because she wants to micromanage things to the level of insanity that every day she's asking, and the deals that she sent truthfully are all shit. we don't have one working file yet. They're
right.
All projects.
Just awful.
That, you know, most of them I'm having to use my bilingual team, and then, you know, income's not verified, or, you know, we're working on visa status, or we're fixing credit. We're doing major, these are 6-12 month projects.
Yeah.
And she's,
and look, there's nothing wrong with a project deal where you got to help people out and it's awesome, but they can't be all that.
I do it every day, but she incessantly asks, well, did your girl call today? Did your team do this? And I had to tell her, I said, look, I can't constantly update you, your assistant, your other assistant. I said, did you read the comments? Well, no, I didn't look in Chime. I said, my team has already updated Chime. Your problem is you don't have communication with your own team, and so you think my team's not doing their job.
Right.
You have to trust my team is doing their job. If we don't have trust, this isn't going to work.
Right.
And so it's funny how she wants these micromanaged updates on files that are 6 months out.
Right.
And I told her, look, that's not going to happen. I'm going to give you a timeline that we're working on credit, and
right,
we need to check back with them in January and again in March. And then probably by next summer, they're going to be ready to
right,
buy.
Right. Have you been paying attention, kind of moving on to the more interesting thing? Have you been paying attention to everything, all the lawsuits going around and all the crazy stuff that's going to be happening with buyers, agents, commissions, potentially, and all those things?
No. What's going on there?
So there was a class action lawsuit going around where basically there was a bunch of people suing the major brokerages.
I heard, but I didn't know any of them.
This is the big, big box brokerages, the biggest brokerages in the country.
Yeah.
And they're suing them because of policies and trainings and things like that that forced a seller to pay a buyer's agent commission. And so what's coming out of the lawsuit is, first of all, these big companies are settling for like tens of millions of dollars, like lots of money. But going beyond that, now there's policy changes coming where people are now saying, look, we're no longer requiring our agents to charge a certain commission, and we're no longer requiring our agents to offer a buyer's agent anything. So imagine something gets listed in the MLS and they are offering $0 to a buyer's agent. And imagine how that's going to shake up the industry. And there's so many crazy things going on. And, you know, my argument has always been, it's weird being in the industry where they find paying Zillow or Realtor.com for buyer leads is socially acceptable to other real estate agents.
Right.
Why is it okay for a $1 billion company to get in the middle and be the middleman to keep fees high, and that's okay for the industry.
Yeah.
But for me to wipe out the middleman and provide a value proposition that the public loves to generate leads, which is what we do, why is that awful and bad for the industry? But that's the way it's always been. But now it's going to get to the point for a lot of people where if this continues to shake out and you've got more brokerages distancing themselves from NAR, because NAR is there to represent the realtors and do that. And so if NAR is seen as, well, that's kind of potentially causing a headache for us because that's what's seen as the industry and we have to distance ourselves from that because that's why we're getting sued.
Hmm.
And if that takes place and buyer's agency is now something that's negotiated or buyer's agents aren't offered anything, like what happens to all these agents who can't get listings?
Wow.
What happens to the ones that now have to exist on buyers? What happens in your industry when we get to a situation in which...
That's a huge shakeup.
People have to now pay their own buyer's agent, potentially.
Right, because that's always... I mean, that's really the big value proposition. I don't cost anything. Right. The seller pays my commission.
That's one of the parts of the lawsuit that is being strictly mandated, is they can no longer say, oh, I'm your buyer's agent, I'm three.
Because that's always been said.
That people are trained to say that.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that is. I mean, I remember on the mortgage side, because clients who didn't know, mm-hmm. well, I don't have the money to hire an agent. Mm-hmm. And of course, we say it doesn't cost you anything to hire an agent. The seller pays for the agent.
That's not going to be the case anymore.
Wow.
I was talking to people earlier today that are getting ready to potentially roll this out. And it's going to be like, look, you're submitting an offer, submit a requested commission.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how wild that's going to be.
Yeah. Well, I remember there were some coaches, and it blew my mind because, I was thinking, how are you doing that? But there are some markets where some of these buyer's agents are making the buyer pay above the 2 or 3% that they're already getting paid. And that blew my mind. I was like, I was on some of these coaching calls and sales calls, and I was thinking about...
No, you got to get them to sign a buyer rep agreement, and you're going to get a minimum of 3%. Well, and I've seen them that are 3% plus transaction fee.
Yeah.
It's insane, man.
I saw that, and it blew my mind to think how they... I was like, I mean, obviously you're a damn good salesman, but 2% wasn't enough, or 2.5% or 3%? They were getting it above and beyond what was already agreed upon in the listing. That's a game changer.
Dude, it is. And you talk about those posts earlier where people are talking about, you know, if you have to justify what you're paid, then obviously there's something going on there. I asked my CPA one time, I'm like, dude, being a top producing real estate agent in this market means you did about 7 deals. I was like, what would you do if you only did 7 people's taxes? He's like, I would be living under a bridge. I would be scrounging for ramen noodles every day.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't exist with that, man. I think the world has gotten too small and technology has gotten too good for the fees to remain where they are across the board.
It happened to me years ago.
Oh, I know.
I
everybody's been through this crunch except for the real estate brokerage.
I don't feel bad.
Mm.
You know, it's just...
It makes you pivot.
Survival of the fittest. Mm. And it's, again, adaptation. You have to adapt to technology and to what's happening. But with technology now, AI. I mean, you can advertise more. You can put out more content. You can do more things. You can suddenly scale at a bigger
I can ask level. ChatGPT for it to give me a Morgan Freeman voice pitching my company to run a Facebook ad, and by God, it'll do it in 2 seconds. I mean, it's wild what you can do nowadays. And I don't know. I think innovation is great, and we as real estate agents in the industry, we can't love our innovation that makes our lives easier, but then resent it for making it more efficient and more cost-effective for our clients. We have to embrace it. And that's why we've been doing what we've been doing forever. It's when you embrace that change and you try to become that change, you wind up coming out the other side of it and saying, hey, this is awesome. We love this. This is, you know, it's like, don't throw me in the briar patch. No, I love the briar patch.
Yeah.
It's where I want to be. And it's when you're kicking and screaming that you just seems too self-serving, and it seems like your heart's not in the right place.
Yeah. LendingTree did it to us a decade ago, and it's...
You're still here?
I love competing because I win 9 out of 10 of those.
Right.
And I had one time, I remember.
So how do you win 9 out of 10 of those?
Number one, we have the best rates. We're wholesale direct. I don't have multiple layers of management like the big corporations. I don't have an arena. I don't have a NASCAR team. I don't waste money on all that dumb
so
shit.
So you're more efficient.
100% more efficient.
But and why else do you win?
And our service level is far better, our experience. But I also service everyone.
Sure.
I have mobile homes to jumbo loans, I tell people. I had a lender here in town that it was a mobile home deal with a lower credit score. And they like turn their nose up and they go, oh, well, why don't you call Intelligent Mortgage for that? That's right up their alley. And I was like, you're right, it sure is. I'll take it.
So look, so basically what you're saying is you run a more efficient company and you're a very big tent that can handle everything from a trailer to a multi-million dollar home.
Right.
And your rates are more aggressive and you're more efficient and all those things. I mean, it sounds like that's a choice.
Exactly.
It's not an oops. That's a choice.
No, I chose to be your one-stop shop for everything.
And it's awesome when you make that choice to be that volume-based person and represent everybody and take care of everybody, because I'm in an industry where everybody, like the degrading thing is they're like, oh, well, you're just Walmart. You're the Walmart of the real estate industry. And I'll ask them.
I'd like to have the Walton family bank account.
And I ask them, I'm like, and what are you? And they're like, well, I'm Saks Fifth Avenue. I'm like, really? Well, Walmart's worth about $400 billion and Saks Fifth is worth about $4 billion.
Yeah.
And Saks Fifth's been doing it for an extra 100 years.
True.
So maybe Walmart is doing it better. Now, yeah. I'm not saying you got to shop at Walmart, but what I'm saying is the industry has to be open-minded to the fact that you can be better and cheaper and more efficient.
Yeah.
And that's not bad for the consumer.
There's a lot of fat in my industry that can be trimmed. I'm recruiting right now the group, and they signed with me.
Okay.
They're going to be an Intelligent Mortgage branch in Oklahoma.
Very cool. That's where I graduated high school, by the way. Where are they at?
They are Tulsa.
Tulsa,
okay. Oklahoma. And so I'm talking to the gentleman. His wife actually owns a real estate company.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they in the past were big in the subprime mortgage days. And this guy had recruited branches. So I'm talking to this guy, and he said, Brandon, you're limited to 2.75% as a broker. I said, yeah, we are. And in my market, these top loan officers are from a couple of other national lenders, and he's telling me I'm leaving money on the table because they're averaging 4 to 5 points on their deals. And based on your model, I would leave about $600,000 to $750,000 on the table over the next year. And I said, that, in theory, is true, but what are they not seeing is all the deals that are never coming in their door, because this week alone, I took at least 7 deals that were with all those national competitors that were charging 2 and 3 discount points, and I don't have to charge any. And on an FHA buyer who can only come up with 3%, 3.5% down, they don't have another 2 points for discount, a USDA buyer.
Sure.
And I said, so you're gonna miss out.
Dude.
And they were making 4 and 5. I said, that market is gone.
Dude, so it's funny. The more extreme version of what you're talking about is it's a loss leader. Okay, and there's a lot of people that aren't familiar with that term.
Yeah.
That's what we use our listings for, but it's, for some companies, they're actually losing money on something just so they can make more money on other things. Now,
sure,
we're not losing money on listings. We still make a great amount of money at 1%. But you look at things like if you see an air conditioning company like saying, I'll come check out your AC for $99, they're not making money on that. They're probably losing money on that.
Sure, or, the technician.
Or treading water at best. Okay, but why do they do it? Because you might need Freon, you might need a service checkup, you might need a cleaning, you might need new filters. Hell, you might need a whole new AC. And so the funny thing is like, have you ever seen those charts that just kind of scroll by and it shows the richest families in the world?
Yeah.
Okay. In 1989, when the Walton family shot up to the top and they were wealthier than any other family in the world, you know what happened?
The supercenters.
That's when they opened up supercenters. Do you know what the point is of a supercenter?
Because it's strategically
No.
It's set up for you to...
It's flipping groceries at cost.
Right.
Okay. So literally, they made the choice of, well, we know people need milk and eggs and butter and stuff every single week that goes bad, and bread.
Yeah.
And if we get them here, they're going to buy razor blades here and HDMI cables and all those things.
That have a high margin.
The stock of Walmart went up 2,000% because they chose to give away groceries at cost. Think about that.
Yeah.
And so if you are the real estate industry, like my industry, like, just ask yourself, if one of the amazing entrepreneurs of our day, whether you like them or not, like a Bezos or a Zuckerberg or an Elon Musk, do you think any of them would get into real estate and be like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna start a brokerage and charge 6%? Dude, they are gonna blow you out of the water with something you've never even thought of. They are going to innovate. They're gonna be different.
Amazon is getting in.
Good for them.
Amazon, and that scares the hell out of a lot of people, because Amazon is getting in mortgage and real estate.
Good for them.
Yeah, and you, like you said, you think Bezos is gonna charge 6%?
Hell no. Dude, there's crazy companies out there doing crazy things that people have never heard of, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole iron sharpens iron. Whatever's good for the consumer is good.
Yeah, I agree.
I might wake up 10 years from now and be driving a Ferrari like Mr. Gordon, but then again, I might not, and somebody might have completely blown me out of the water. I might be the MySpace that's gone, while somebody else is a billionaire because of the Facebook that is real estate, and either way, it's fine, but I had a good run, and I did something different, and I tried to innovate on behalf of the consumer, and I'm perfectly fine letting the chips fall where they may.
No, I think that's a great close for tonight. And while we're closing out, I mean, tell everybody again who you are, where to find you.
Sure. So we are a real estate brokerage called 1% Lists. There is no bait and switch. That's what we do. We're full service agents. We work with buyers and sellers. If we're listing your house, it's 1% paid at closing, professional photography, everything included. You know, no hidden fees, no nothing. It's just who we are and it's what we do. We save our people money so that they will remember us. We like doing more deals. We like working with buyers. We like all things that higher volume brings us. That's the point of what we do. We're now in 40 something markets around the country, opening the Quad Cities in South Dakota today, signing paperwork on that, believe it or not, later tonight. And you know, just growing and trying to innovate on behalf of the consumer and do a good job and save people some equity. That's it.
I think that's a great mission statement.
I appreciate it.
So, and I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Beautiful evening.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you guys again for tuning in every week to Financial Fitness. Have a great night.
Thank you.